From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, good morning, and it is hour two of our little show here, May 16th, OneRadioNetwork.com. Dr. Anthony Wild has been around the bend, so to speak. Harvard University Medical School, his 15th book, is out, Mind Over Meds, and know when drugs are necessary, when alternatives are better, and when you let your body heal on its own. Dr. Wild, good morning. It's an honor to have you here.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Yes, sir. How's your life these days? You a busy guy?
I am pretty busy. I direct the University of Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine that trains physicians and other health professionals in this new system. So very busy teaching, writing, speaking.
Yeah. Boy, we just did a fascinating show about glyphosates, GMOs, and the work that this lady's doing up in Montana with Stephanie Seneff.
I heard some of it.
Boy, I tell you, it's, wow, man.
Yeah, what a lot out there to
What a challenge, Dr. Wild. I tell you, what.
Yeah.
From your perspective, what kind of things do you think, we've got some ideas that we talk about here to help folks either and obviously stay away from these things as much as possible to detox from the glyphosates. And do you have any ideas on top of your head?
Well, you know, the first rule of detoxification is to stop putting toxins in. So if you take precautions to do that, your body has many ways of cleaning itself out.
The body has its own healing system and oftentimes can get rid of these things, can keep these things moving, huh?
You just want to give your body a chance, and you know, that's really the focus of integrative medicine, is on the body's natural healing potential, and sometimes it needs help.
Yeah. And then how do prescription meds possibly interfere with this process?
Well, you know, it's not just prescription meds. My concern is about over-medication in general. It's over-the-counter medications, prescription medications, as well as all the natural products that people are taking. I think we are very over-medicated. Use of medications has skyrocketed. Obviously, medications can be life-saving. They are needed sometimes, but I think in many instances they're not needed. In many instances, they do more harm than good. They may actually prolong or intensify conditions. And the problem is that this is all doctors are trained to do, is to give medication, and it's also what patients expect and demand.
Do you teach and interact now with docs who are just confused or concerned about when you say these kind of things and because of what they learned in medical school?
Yeah, I think many doctors realize that their education was deficient. I hear many doctors say they're tired of being pill pushers, and they wish they knew other methods, and they want to learn them. And our center has graduated over almost 1,600 physicians and allied health professionals from all specialties in this system, and they're very well trained in nutrition and herbal medicine and use of dietary supplements and all the other things that are left out of conventional medical education.
And how do the docs navigate that now with this whole, Dr. Wilder, standard of care thing that they...
Well, it's sometimes difficult because, you know, there is the evidence-based medicine movement often pressures doctors to give treatments that they don't feel comfortable with, but these are the ones that are approved, they're the ones that are reimbursed by insurance. So sometimes doctors have to figure out ways to go against that.
Yeah, and stay out of harm's way, so to speak.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What can you just give us a general idea of the kind of education you received at Harvard Medical School with nutrition and in relation to using pharmaceutical medicines to treat?
The total instruction I got in nutrition was 30 minutes, which were grudgingly allowed to a dietitian at one hospital I worked at in Boston to tell us about special diets we could order for patients.
Yeah.
I don't think that's changed a whole lot. When nutrition is taught now, it's taught as biochemistry, and it's forgotten as soon as biochemistry exams are over. I think doctors are functionally illiterate in nutrition. It's not their fault. It's not taught, but it's just amazing that a subject that is so obviously important to health is so consistently slighted.
Uh-huh. And when you, so do you spend a lot of time back then looking at different pharmaceutical medicines to treat a particular thing, high blood pressure, cholesterol, whatever they do?
Well, that's what all that I was taught to do.
That's all you do.
Wow. Yeah. If you're diagnosed with high blood pressure, the first thing you want to do is find out if that's real. You want to get a monitor at home, see what it does over several months, you know, and if it's consistently high, first you want to work to change it through lifestyle modification. You want to change diet, you want to increase physical activity, you want to practice relaxation exercises, you can take some supplements like calcium and magnesium. And then if you can't get it down in the normal range, then it may be appropriate to start medication, but you want to start with the lowest dose of the least potent agent.
Mm-hmm. And how does one navigate the people that are half in, half out, and taking different medications and knowing what could screw things up for them? You know what I mean?
Well, I hope my book will be a valuable resource. It goes through the categories of drugs that I think are most misused and overused, like statins and antibiotics and psychiatric drugs and sleep aids and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And in each category, I give examples of integrative treatment plans for how to manage these conditions, either without medication or with minimal medication.
Oh, great. That's a brilliant idea. And when you talk about the statins, this is a pretty... can be a pretty dangerous drug, the amount that it's given to people and what it's doing, the side effects.
Statins can be very effective. They're very effective at one thing, lowering LDL, the bad kind of cholesterol. But that's only one risk factor for heart attacks. I think statins are very overprescribed today, and the decision to start on one, that should be evaluated very carefully because they're not benign. They're appropriate for some people, but I think we're giving them to far too many people. And I also worry that when a doctor puts a patient on a statin, he or she feels that they've discharged their responsibility, that they don't have to talk to the patient about diet, about stress, about exercise. And the fact is that half of people who have first heart attacks have normal cholesterol. So cholesterol is not the only factor we should be paying attention to, and statins are not the only way to go about it.
Sure. In your opinion, what is the model, the paradigm that's happening with this issue called atherosclerosis?
Well, this is there's a genetic component to it, but it's a lifestyle-driven disease. And, I think it is related to the diets that we eat, particularly the kinds of fats and carbohydrates that people eat, to lack of exercise, many factors involved in that, but it's it's something that became epidemic in the past century, in very young people. I think we've got a much better handle on it today, but the fact is it can be reversed, and it can be reversed through dietary change and through lifestyle change, before you resort to medication.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the antibiotics. Over the years, last 20, 30 years, we kept hearing that these superbugs were being created, and people were kind of immune to this and all of that, right?
Well, it's a lot worse now.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, right?
Yeah, there's a real object lesson here. You know, antibiotics were very great tools, and we've squandered them. We've used them in far too many instances when they're not necessary. I'd say they're needed about 10% of the instances in which we now give them.
10%?
Yep. And every time they're given when they're not needed, they drive the evolution of bacteria in very bad directions. And now, you hear serious experts on infectious disease talking about what we're going to do when we no longer have antibiotics, how we're going to deal with bacterial infections, going back to methods that were used in the 1930s, for example. And this is a real possibility, that this is something we've created, mm-hmm. Through our misuse of these drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So can I just say, never ask a doc, if you have a cold that doesn't end when you'd like it to, a respiratory infection, even if it's really a bad one, never to demand an antibiotic from a physician. And no physician should ever give you a Z-Pak in response to that demand unless there is a documented bacterial infection there.
I can remember I was in high school and a doctor gave me tetracycline for my pimples.
You know, people are put on antibiotics for months, years like, for acne.
It's like, well, what is it? And my mom said, I don't think you should take that. And I said,
good. Your mom, moms often know best. And you know, the fact is, bacteria are not a major factor in acne. That's not what we should be, directing a drug against.
It's like, yeah, I didn't know. He just gave me this, you know. He said, you're taking this and get rid of your pimples, right? Dr. Andrew Weil is with us, Mind Over Meds, his 15th book. We have a few questions for you. He can only stay for a few minutes this morning. He's doing a lot of interviews on his book, Mind Over Meds. His website is, let's see, it is just Andrew, drweil.com.
It's drweil.com, D-R-W-E-I-L.com.
Drweil.com. Yeah. You have some Ayurvedic background as well, don't you? Ayurvedic medicine.
Well, I've spent some time in India. I've experienced Ayurvedic medicine. That's much less well known here. Of course, you're in an area where, there's more of it than other parts of the country. A very interesting system. I think it's especially good at lifestyle medicine, and I've seen it be quite effective with conditions like asthma, with atherosclerosis. It's an interesting system using a lot of natural remedies.
Yeah, they've got some pretty powerful herbs too over there in those,
those
universities. Yeah. Do we have any? What's your conjecture, Dr. Weil, of what the effects have been with the growth hormones, the antibiotics, and stuff in the chickens and the meat before those of us who are more aware got onto, the clean stuff, organic or grass fed? Do we know really what this was doing to the whole antibiotic mix?
Absolutely. The incredible amount of antibiotics that we use in animals that we raise for food, and by the way, also in plants. It's why they're widely used in agriculture as well. These also, first of all, they get into our system, but they also are a factor in driving the evolution of bacteria in ways that are creating these super bugs. So that's huge. And in terms of hormones, I think that the hormones that are used as growth promoters in cows especially, that find their ways into our bodies through milk, through meat, I think these are factors that increase risks of hormonally driven cancers like breast cancer in women and prostate cancer in men.
Because these kind of hormone disruptors, they depending on the cancer, they can catapult it and make it grow.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's a question for you from Gail. Could Dr. Weil discuss what kind of protocols that he uses and recommends to help folks naturally with arthritic pain and rheumatoid at the rheumatoid center where he works?
Well, if you're talking about, there's rheumatoid arthritis, which is autoimmune, and I think that's, one that you can really affect through integrative approaches, dietary change, mind-body medicine, various natural supplements. Osteoarthritis, where inflammation may be less of an element, still, I think, can be affected in these ways. The most powerful natural anti-inflammatory agent we know is turmeric, the yellow spice.
Yeah, yeah.
Widely used in India, you can get extracts of it. One fact to know about it is you have to take it with black pepper or an extract of black pepper that's in a lot of supplements in order for it to be absorbed from the intestinal tract, but it's a very effective, safe anti-inflammatory agent.
Uh-huh.
And I've developed an anti-inflammatory diet. It's not anything that takes pleasure away from food. It's based on the Mediterranean diet, but I've added Asian elements to it. And you can find the details of this on my website, drweil.com.
Drweil.com. Oh, cool. Do you think we've had people conjecture that this turmeric needs a little black pepper for it to work? Do you think that's true? Have you heard
Absolutely.
About
it? Absolutely. If you're dealing with inflammation in the gut, like inflammatory bowel disease, it doesn't matter. But if you want to get the effect in your body generally, say for arthritis, you want to take it along with black pepper. Indians, eat turmeric at almost every meal, and almost always it's used with black pepper and other spices.
Yeah.
And most of the turmeric supplements and curcumin that you see on the market now will say that they have either black pepper extract or piperine or biopurine or all the
something
same thing.
In there. We have a good turmeric in our store, folks, and if you'd like to look at it, and there's definitely black pepper in there. We interviewed the fellow. Here's another email for you. What has Dr. Weil found to be most helpful protocol for people acid reflux and heartburn right. and his clinic for people. You got, yeah, I can hear you already. There's a lot of it around. You know, I'm glad she brought this up because I've been interested in this idea. So over the years, so many of the natural docs have gone out there, and they started this 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you now don't have enough acid. So you don't have enough acid because you're getting older, and then the body is fermenting in the tummy, and then it produces lactic acid, and that's what's causing the heartburn. And then people are taking a lot of HCL. I did that for years and almost burned my stomach up, but that's another story, right? So what's your theory and conjecture on what's going on? There's a lot of it around. I mean, Tums, I think, is the number one still in the world.
Well,
right?
Tums are fine. You know, there's a whole chapter in my book on gastroesophageal reflux.
Uh-huh.
And the drugs that are used for this, the acid-blocking drugs, things like Nexium, I think are some of the most dangerous drugs out there. When I was growing up, nobody had reflux. People had heartburn, and they treated it with Tums, which are quite safe.
Just
and I
calcium.
Think most people understood that heartburn was your stomach's way of telling you that you had mistreated it. Either you ate too much, you ate the wrong foods, the wrong combinations. You know, now we've totally medicalized this, and we see excess acid as the problem and give drugs that block its production, and these are sold over-the-counter as well as on prescription. If you stay on these drugs any length of time, you can't get off them, because if you try to reduce the dose or stop them, there's an outpouring of acid much greater than you had to begin with, and symptoms are much worse.
Mm-hmm.
And these drugs cause a lot of problems. They interfere with nutrient absorption. They are even now associated with increased risk of dementia. All sorts of problems. That too much acid is not the problem. So first thing you want to do is look at what in your diet may be causing this. Stomach irritants like coffee or decaf, eating the wrong combinations of foods, too much. Then you want to look at stress, because the mind plays a great role in how the stomach operates. There are some safe natural remedies. One that I use a lot is DGL, a licorice extract that increases the mucus coating in the lining of the stomach and esophagus and makes it more resistant to the effects of acid.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are alternatives to this, but I think the first thing is to look at the lifestyle factors that may be causing the problem.
So we definitely know worry, angst, and that for many people go right to the gut.
Well, look at, you know, if you're in a university, a college, at exam time, the infirmary is flooded with students and with diarrhea, stomach distress. Very good example of the mind-body connection.
Sure. Sure. So what about, though, this lactic acid, lack of HCL for quote-unquote older people? What is your theory on that?
It is true, and sometimes taking supplemental hydrochloric acid can be very valuable and sometimes will solve the problem. So I think you have to evaluate the patient carefully, but that can be a useful approach.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email. What does Dr. Weil think about using zeolites for detoxification? Are they safe? Do they accumulate in the body? Zeolites?
Probably safe. I don't know that they're effective. And again, let me just repeat that the body has many ways of freeing itself from toxins. Through sweat, and you can increase that by sitting in saunas or steam rooms, through urination, and you increase that by increasing fluid intake, through bowel elimination, you want to make sure you have regular bowel movements, through breathing, if you're doing aerobic exercise, you exhale, you can increase exhalation of toxins. And the liver is the most powerful detoxifying organ of the body. Amazing what it can do. And one thing that's available to help the liver is an herb called milk thistle that I'm sure you know.
Mm-hmm.
Completely safe, non-toxic, revs up liver metabolism. But let me just repeat, the first rule of detoxification is to stop putting toxins in. And if you do that, and give the body a chance and work with those natural mechanisms, it will clear itself up, and there should not be any need to take zeolites or anything else.
Mm-hmm. Joyce writes in, Patrick has interviewed many people the last few years they're using my word conjecture, I like it, that grains are really a problem for humans. I'd like to get Dr. Weil's opinion on that.
My opinion is that it's not grains, it's what we've done with them.
Uh-huh.
I think most people do not understand the difference between a whole grain and a pulverized grain. When you have a whole grain or one that's cracked into a few big pieces, the starch in there is tightly compacted, and it's very hard for digestive enzymes to get in there and convert it to sugar. When you mill a grain into flour, whether or not it's got the bran, whether or not it's got the germ, you convert the starch into a substance with infinite surface area, and it's a snap for digestive enzymes to turn that into sugar and raise blood sugar. So, you know, we look at, you go into a supermarket and there's whole wheat bread, and sometimes it has seals from the FDA saying this is a whole grain product. Where are the whole grains? There's no grains there. It's flour. And there is essentially no difference between whole wheat bread and most whole wheat bread and white bread. It's just colored white bread. There are true whole grain breads around, you know, very dense, you know, German pumpernickels, for example, where you can actually see grains or pieces of grains. So I think whole grains or cracked grains in moderation are okay. But I think the all the products that we have out there that are made with pulverized grains, with flour, this is part of what's driving the obesity epidemic, the type 2 diabetes, and a bunch of other problems.
Isn't it curious to see a whole aisle with gluten-free products at the store?
So where did this come from? You know, why should a grain that has been sustained human life for millennia suddenly become a problem? And, you know, this is peculiar to our population. I've made a number of trips to China in recent years, and in any restaurant in China, gluten is served as a protein. You can order sweet and sour gluten with black bean sauce. I've asked many Chinese about gluten sensitivity, and I get blank stares. They've never heard of it. So it's something that's happening here and in recent times. If I had to bet money, I think it has to do with changes in the microbiome. I think that our gut organisms have changed drastically in the past few decades as a result of antibiotic use, the type of industrial food that we're eating, the rise in cesarean delivery, the decline in breastfeeding. I think all of this has changed our gut organisms, and I think they are what determine our environmental sensitivities, and I think that's what accounts for the rise in gluten sensitivity.
You know, there's a lot of docs out there. They write a lot of books and get in a lot of press about conjecturing that, you know, this whole grain thing, we never were meant to eat these. I mean,
yeah, I know. I've read it all.
I know. So you're not going for that, though, at this point in your life.
No. I have two dogs, Rhodesian Ridgebacks, and I give them grain-free diets because I don't think dogs would eat grains. But I think we do fine. It's just that, as I say, what we've done with them, we've refined grains into products that digest very quickly, that disturb insulin metabolism, stress the pancreas. I think that's not good for us, but I think whole or cracked grains in moderation are okay.
Do you have any magic potions, pills, whatever, to get this biome in the gut happy again? What are some of the things that you talk to your patients about in your docs that you train?
Well, you know, first of all is eating fermented foods, which I'm a big fan of. And by the way, a lot of them are very easy to make at home. Pickles, sauerkraut, kimchi, miso, other fermented soy products, kefir, yogurt. I think it's very good to include these in the diet on a regular basis, and they may be much better for us than probiotic supplements, or they might, you know, affect our gut organisms in a better way. And then I think you want to eat, you know, a diet that favors the development of organisms you like, and that's generally, you know, avoiding refined, processed, and manufactured foods. Mm-hmm. And, of course, being very cautious about antibiotic use, because antibiotics wreak havoc with the microbiome. And, again, you only want to take them if there's a really demonstrated need, a serious bacterial infection. And if you do have to take antibiotics, you want to be on a probiotic supplement from the time you start the antibiotic until sometime afterward.
These probiotics, you know, a lot of them are expensive. Some of them are in the fridge. Some of them say they got 48 billion.
Right.
I got 28 strains. What is your just basic theory
about
probiotics?
Well, I think, you know, you want to do a little homework on this. I generally recommend Lactobacillus GG. It's a strain that we have scientific data that it survives passage through stomach acid and gets and colonizes the intestinal tract, and there's various brands of that.
Lactobacillus GG.
GG, capital G, capital G.
Before you go, this is a great way to end, and I want to get your opinions on it. Here's a long email from Susie in Asheville, but I'll just kind of condense it down. She says, Doc should just leave the healing to the body and leave these people alone. There would be, there are about 85% less doctors, you know, at the top of the food chain. She said it's like the food pyramid and everything the government gets involved in. It's upside down. There's really no need to go to medical doctors other than Trump. So she goes on and on. God love her. And she wrote in caps, too. And it's insurance. So let's end like this. So
first, well, let me just give you one. There's a famous saying in medicine. I think it dates from several hundred years ago, saying that the main business of the physician is to distract the patient while time heals the condition.
Say that again?
The main business of a physician should be to distract the patient and let time heal the condition.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, that's a good one.
That's another way of saying the same thing.
Yeah. So what do you think about our relationship with the government? And so we have all these GMOs. We got these, you know, mandatory vax in California. We have people knocking down doors in Wisconsin and robbing all the raw cheese. You know what's going on. It's like, what do we humans do? What do you think our relationship is with this monster here called the government?
Well,
they don't seem to have our best health in mind, Doc.
No, they often seem to have the health of vested interests and industry in mind more than of us. I think we have to be informed and wary and alert and take action whenever we can.
Uh-huh. Do you think there's going to be some light someday? Are you hopeful that the whole GMO thing is going to get somehow spoken about?
It's interesting. People in other parts of the world seem much more concerned about these issues than Americans do. I spent time in Canada when there was an attempt made to use bovine growth hormone in dairy cows up there. People didn't let it happen.
Yeah.
You know, Americans didn't seem to care.
Yeah.
In Europe and Japan, people are much more alarmed about GMOs than they are here. So I think it'll eventually change.
Do you? Yeah. Well, I guess if we could start to connect the dots. Well, Dr. Weil, thanks a lot for being on the show. It was an honor to talk to you. It's been a long time since I think we talked 20 years ago somewhere. Some other radio show that you'd never. The 15th book is called Mind Over Meds. Dr. Andrew Weil, and it's drweil.com.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Doc could only stay 30 minutes because he's a busy guy and doing a lot of interviews. It was fun talking to him and getting his ideas on it, on things like we talk about here day in and day out. Thanks for being here this morning. We'll just kind of wrap up now. And, half an hour off. I don't know what to do with myself. Shoot, man. I wonder if somebody's going to cut my pay. This is Patrick Timpone. I'll see you tomorrow. Andrew Goss with Real World of Money. We'll talk about dark field microscopy on Thursday, and I am going to invite Janet Perry to talk about stage 4 cancer, the way she's ditched this stuff. Totally natural. And that'll be on Thursday as well. If she says yes, which I suspect she was. I talked to her a little bit last night. So you all take care of yourself. Thanks for Lynn and Sharon, and we'll see you on tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, with Andrew Goss. Get your questions in for Andrew. If you care to, Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Take care.